Thanks, Eric. Hi, everybody. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy. Welcome to the show. Participate anytime you like. 312-981-7200 gets it done. Hi, Wendy.
I don't want to participate today.
Oh, you're not going to participate?
No.
Okay, good.
Wow, people, you're asking the listeners to work for us.
Yeah. I don't think all the workload should be on you and me. What kind of a show would that be? That would be awful.
It would be awful.
Very quickly, I just want to congratulate my friend, David Cromer, who I went to college with. You and I have had him on the show a couple of times. One of the nicest guys I've ever met in my life. I got to know him at Columbia College years and years and years ago. And he always had this kind of aura about him. Like anytime you'd see him, you'd go, he's not ready yet. Something's going on with Dave, and I don't know what it is, but at some point he'll be ready, and boy, is he going to shine. And last night, as he walked on stage to accept his Tony Award, I said, yep, I was right. His time has come.
I love plays. I love musicals. I did not watch the Tony Awards, but I remember we had David on, mm-hmm. and I actually kept checking the updates of who won, mm-hmm. and I saw, what is it, The Band's Visit.
The Band's Visit is the name of the show, yeah.
When I was first checking, that category had not been given yet.
Yeah.
So I kept looking, and I kept refreshing my browser to come back, and I was so happy, because when we spoke to him, this was his first nomination as well.
It was, correct.
And I remember saying, oh, you go from 0 to 10, and that play won 10 awards.
Yeah.
That's huge.
He did, yeah, it was quite a night for his show. Here's what scared me last night. As they're reading the nominees, there's 5 nominees up for Best Director for musical on Broadway. One of them, the guy or guys who direct, it might be 2 guys who directed, what's the show? It's based on Tina Fey's movie. I'm blanking on the name. Anyway, they got thunderous applause. Mean Girls, thank you. They got thunderous applause. Like everybody else got
not as much as Robert De Niro.
He got big applause, didn't he? He got some big applause.
And he didn't even win anything.
He didn't win anything, but he made a statement. We'll discuss that in a second. All right, so they're going through the directorial candidates, the people who might win. And the people who did Mean Girls, the place erupts and goes crazy. And I said, oh, how'd you like to be David sitting there thinking, oh, I got a chance. Wait a minute. How come everybody loves them, but they just kind of like me, but they love them? And then they call his name. And I go, wow, I didn't expect that. That's so nice.
I don't think he expected that.
I don't think he did either.
I mean, obviously, you get a speech ready if you're in that position.
Unless you're Sarah Jessica Parker. Her theory was always be amazed. Be so amazed that you won, even though it's down to 5 people in the universe. You got a chance. She always was out of breath and fanning herself so she doesn't pass out, and she's amazed.
That's terrible. I always have a speech ready, and I'm not even up for anything.
Just in case your name is called.
Yeah, I'm ready to roll because I want to make sure I thank all the appropriate people. You're in my thanks.
Oh, well, thank you. That's very nice of you. That's so nice of you.
You thank me for a thank you.
I have a PowerPoint presentation ready at all times. Just in case.
No, you don't, because you don't even know how to do it.
I don't know what a PowerPoint presentation is. I just thought I'd say it. But I was so happy for him and so proud of him. And then he comes up and he makes a very nice speech. He seemed a little nervous, and why wouldn't you be?
Yeah.
But his speech was about, you know, inclusion, and if you feel like an outsider, you know, reach out to somebody and get some help and everything. And it was so well-timed and well-said. And as I'm watching him up there, there's a flicker going on in my head. I'm seeing him present day being a distinguished Broadway director, but I'm also remembering him in college, you know, just kind of, you know, sitting down in a hallway between classes and talking to him about everything. And
now he's a Tony Award winner.
Now he just won a Tony Award.
That's
and will not
impressive.
Return my calls.
I did not watch it because I was watching Celebrity Family Feud with the Kardashians.
Oh, well, that's better. Were you proud of them the way I was proud of my friend David Cromer?
I was proud of Kanye West for smiling ear to ear. I just want to tell you, in the lightning round or the fast money or whatever it's called,
yeah.
Kim Kardashian, who looked great, was asked a couple of questions that her response made me laugh.
What were the questions?
One of them was on a scale of 1 to 10, how do you rate yourself amongst the people you work with? And right away she says 10. So he stops the clock because he's yucking it up.
Was it Steve Harvey hosting?
Yeah.
Did he do? Did he at any point, Wendy, look embarrassed and shocked?
Yes.
Really?
I know. It surprised me, too.
He's never done that before.
Who watches that show? And I don't know why we were. I'm blaming Jimmy Mack. He had it on. And
wait, it was the Kardashian family against who?
Well, I couldn't really figure it out. You had Kylie Jenner, Kris Jenner, a pregnant Khloe, who's already had a baby.
Oh.
Right? Didn't she? Did Khloe have her baby? Yes.
Yeah, she
track. All right. So this was pre-taped. Oh. There was some guy I didn't know. This was on the Kardashian side. And then Kim was with Kanye, and I imagine some of Kanye's maybe siblings, cousins,
friends.
So she friends.
Could have played for either team if she wanted to.
Right.
Right? Yeah.
But she didn't. But so that's on a scale of 1 to 10. But the best thing, question and answer, and I'm sorry I don't have the audio, but I can do it justice. Steve Harvey, you know, again, this is the lightning round, so you go very quickly, and it's like, what part of your body do you keep bumping things with? And she says, my butt. When have you ever, and she, zero was the answer.
But that question
survey
was
says
designed,
zero.
Whoever wrote that question designed it specifically for her. Like, usually on Family Feud, they don't build questions around the guests.
I guess.
But if you said to me, hey, who in the universe got asked this question, I'd go, well, probably Kim Kardashian.
Well,
probably.
And then everybody laughed, and there was a big fat goose egg, because no one runs into things with their butt. And then she felt the need to say, seriously, I run into things with my butt all the time. So Steve Harvey...
Shocked and embarrassed.
Yeah, but yet managed to turn her around and hug her so the audience could see her butt. Oh. I'm like, what am I watching?
Yeah. Yep.
And then I made fun of one of her answers, and it was the number one answer. Let me ask you this. Name something in a milkshake.
Now, do I have to answer that as myself?
Just
or
what
as...
would you answer? Don't think.
Well, if I was Kim Kardashian, my butt would be the answer to every question that was asked of me.
No, she got the number one answer for this. But it wouldn't
milk?
Have been.
Was it milk?
Yeah, but I would have said ice cream.
Oh, well, those are both.
But ice cream should be the
solid.
Top. There's more ice cream than milk in a milkshake. I love my baby's milkshake.
I think either of those, that, you're safe on either of those, right?
And then Kanye was asked on a scale from 1 to 10 because he was in a soundproof room and then he came out.
That's
and Steve,
the best place for him.
You're hateful should, and mean.
He should always be in a soundproof room.
Thank God
always.
You'd like David Cromer, or, you know, you'd be dissing him.
I have
him.
No respect at all for Kanye West. Zero. 0.000 respect for him.
Well, he was in a soundproof booth, and he came out, and they said, on a scale of 1 to 10, how do you rate yourself amongst people that you work with? And he said 10 also.
Because he couldn't think of a higher number.
And then,
he
of course,
said 1,000.
You heard the, and then he said 5. And then he was asked.
He answered after his answer was rejected.
Well, yeah, because she had answered that already.
It was already said. All right.
Boy, you're filled with hate today. Way to start the
I'm
week.
I'm not, but what a goofy show to watch those two families square off against each other.
Well, then I was going to stick around and watch Michael Strahan do the new $100 million pyramid.
Yeah.
Because Wanda Sykes was on it. There are some. Don't these celebrities have things to do?
I think for them, it's a fun night.
I guess.
Don't you imagine? Because they're at no loss for celebrities. Like it used to be when those shows were on in the daytime, no disrespect to Vicki Lawrence, but that was a good day.
Right.
You had Vicki Lawrence. That was exciting. But now if you watch Match Game or Family Feud or any of them, they get the A-listers. They really do.
If Bruce Valanche was still alive, he wouldn't be able to get on now.
First of all, he is still alive.
Oh, not much longer.
That's the ultimate slam. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then there's a lot to discuss. Can I quickly defend my dislike of Kanye West?
Sure. Why? Did you get a text?
Yes. Maybe people think that it's that there's some reason I don't like Kanye West, and I will explain. Not even a couple years ago, he was talking about slavery and he was comparing his life
right.
to slavery, explaining how
that.
He is treated every day as a slave. And the point that I've made on the show in the past is that I don't think he understands slavery because he lives in a mansion and he's driven around in Rolls Royces and he's got a private plane. And everywhere he goes, he's showered with love and affection and money. And most slaves weren't. So to compare himself to a slave and say he's living a slave's life, I think is really disrespectful to any slave that's ever existed anywhere.
I agree.
Then he said just a few short months ago, he once again brought up slavery, and he said that slavery was a choice.
Yeah, I remember that too.
And there's not a single, there's not a shred of truth to that. Slavery was not a choice.
Well, I never said I liked him, but he is out in the public eye.
Well, he's always in the public eye. He's a fame vampire. He and Kim Kardashian, they serve, instead of oxygen, they have fame. They need fame to breathe, you know? So when you parade a guy like this out on a game show, I have a hard time enjoying it because he's just so backwards, you know?
He's not well, I don't think.
I don't think he is either.
And I don't mean that meanly.
No, I don't think he is either. I think something's not connected properly with him.
I don't think I'm well either because I'm worried about salmonella.
Why?
Or E. coli or something. You know, I am...
Because of melons?
I am... Nice melons.
Mm-hmm.
I am not that great of a mom, and sometimes we go a while without fruit, fresh fruits or vegetables.
When
and
you
I know
say
that's,
a while, you mean...
I don't know. I don't always buy it, maybe. You know, they're teenage boys. They can go pick an apple off a tree. Come on.
Them and their friends Tom Sawyer and Huckleberry Finn.
Maybe.
They can go get an apple off a tree.
Maybe. They can take the dog Bingo, B-I-N-G-O.
Yeah.
So I did the right thing and I went and got a bunch of fresh cut fruit because I'll tell you, it is impossible for me to cut a watermelon. Watching a woman cut a watermelon and watching a woman put pantyhose on are two things you probably shouldn't see.
Explain that. What's wrong with the cutting process?
Because it's usually a large watermelon.
Yeah.
And you have a pretty big knife, the biggest that you can find in your knife block.
Yes.
And I'm always worried that it's going to roll.
Oh.
I mean, I just...
Have you ever had an incident where you would think, I'm prone
close.
To this?
Yes.
Yeah?
I mean, it's slippery. I try to put it on a towel so it doesn't move. And I put the knife in and I kind of very slowly move the watermelon around. But at some point, I feel like I'm going to cut my fingers off.
Oh.
And I need my fingers.
Yeah.
I got to push buttons here.
Right.
So I went and got the pre-cut melon, and now there's this huge recall, and they were distributed to Georgia, Illinois, Indiana, Kentucky, Michigan, Missouri, North Carolina, Ohio.
And I know you always buy your watermelon in North Carolina. You've said that many times on the show. You drive up to Raleigh.
No, it's Illinois. It was sold in clear plastic containers at stores including Costco Wholesale Corp, Kroger, Payless. Uh-huh. You buy shoes and melon?
Yeah. They have a special now. You buy a pair of shoes, you get a melon half off. It sounds ridiculous, but we've saved...
It's a BOGO?
We've saved so much money at Payless. They're way in the back. When you come in, you don't even think they'd have watermelon. But then you go to the back and you go, look at all the fresh produce back here. It's great.
And then Payless has a BOGO with an H at the end because it's buy one, get one half.
Yeah.
Instead of get one.
That's how they do it.
Owens, Sprouts, I like the name of that store. Trader Joe's, which is where I went.
Oh.
Walgreens, Walmart, and Whole Foods.
Uh-huh. So pretty much anywhere where watermelon is sold.
Yeah. And I bought mango and watermelon and pineapple, all pre-cut. I know it's more money, but it saves me time.
Get your affairs in order. This is the end.
I'm not kidding. We all enjoyed some really wonderful watermelon last night and said, boy, this is the best watermelon we've ever
had.
You know what happens when you think it's the best.
It's the beginning of the end. You're done. You're done.
I have E. coli or salmonella or whatever it is. Salmonella.
I don't think you do. I'm pretty sure. You feel fine, right?
No, now that I know it's a possibility.
You can't do that.
Oh.
It's planted the idea in your head. Go over to Payless and tell them that you want to return the shoes and the watermelon. See what they say.
All right, well, be careful out there. There were 60 cases reported. 32 were reported in Michigan, which leaves some that could be happening in Illinois.
Right.
Oh, my God.
Salmonella can
result in serious illness and produce significant and potentially fatal infections in young children, not me, frail or elderly people.
That's you.
And others with weakened immune systems. And,
also you.
It's a multi-state outbreak. How does this keep happening?
I don't know.
Fruit's not supposed to get these things.
We always hear about it in chicken.
Yeah.
You don't usually hear about it in watermelon. But, I mean...
Did somebody place raw chicken next to the watermelon they were cutting?
Someone always does.
To prop it up so they wouldn't cut their hands?
I wouldn't be shocked.
All right, well, if I have to excuse myself, that's what's
wrong.
It's
because... Right.
I have it.
How many salmonella days do we get here at WGN? Because every station's different.
I think I'm going to throw
up. Two or three?
You know me. You know I'm going to feel like this all day.
I know.
Day.
Just because you read the story, though.
But
you
I never... I tried to be a good mom and get all this fresh fruit on a day when this multi-state outbreak of salmonella happens.
No good deed.
God!
No good seed shall go unpunished.
I got the seed list.
You did. All right, a break, then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Thank you, Eric. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And here on WGN Radio, Bill, have you ever wanted to meet a celebrity?
Oh, yeah.
Have you done it?
No. I've never met anyone famous.
Why are you looking at me like that?
I've met celebrities,
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, but you've done it in, I believe, door number one, maybe door number two,
right.
Where you're a VIP.
Yeah.
We have someone who's going to explain the third door, Alex Benayan, in the studio with us. Alex, you've written the book called The Third Door, and I love the explanation here. Explain the three doors.
So over the past 7 years, I've been tracking down the world's most successful people. And I realized they all treat life and business and success the exact same way.
Really?
And the analogy that came to me is that it's sort of like a nightclub. There's always three ways in.
Mm-hmm.
There's the first door, the main entrance, where mm-hmm. 99% of people wait in line hoping to get in.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the second door, the VIP entrance, where the billionaires and celebrities go
and
through.
Bill left. That's where and he's me. Not celebrities.
I come in the back door because my GPS is broken.
That's the second door, not the back door.
No, it's
that's
the back
something
door for
different.
Me. Yeah, for me.
Well, you know, school and society have this way of making us feel like those are the only two ways in.
Yeah.
We're either born into it or you wait your turn like everybody else.
Yeah.
But what I've learned is that there's always, always the third door.
Yep.
And it's the entrance where you have to jump out of line, run down the alley, bang on the door 100 times, crack open the window, go through the kitchen. There's always a way in.
Do things a little differently, right?
100%.
Whatever the norm is, figure out a side path.
Exactly. Yeah. And it doesn't matter if that's how Bill Gates sold his first piece of software or how Spielberg became the youngest director in Hollywood history.
Mm-hmm.
They all took the third door.
Mm.
I used the third door. Elvis Costello was playing at the Riviera Theater and saw the show. And then we heard wind of, hang out by this back door near the alley. He'll come out. And we're like, no way. But we're like, what do we have to lose? Sure enough, this guy comes out and he picked handpicked people. He's like, you, and you, come with me. You walk through the kitchen, through the backstage, and bing, bang, boom, I got to meet Elvis Costello. That's the third
That's
door.
That's amazing. That's right? Exactly it.
All right, so you're 18 years old, you're in college, and what did you do? You left college to do something pretty crazy.
Well, what happened is when I had the idea to write this book, it really came from my own life crisis. Not only did I not know what I wanted to do, I had no idea how all the people who I looked up to, how they did it.
Mm-hmm.
So I went out just naturally looking for the book that held the answers, but eventually I was left empty-handed. And that's when my naive thinking kicked in of, well, if no one's written the book I'm dreaming of reading, why not write it myself?
Oh, yeah. That's exactly. So smart. That's so smart.
But
so,
I had a problem, though.
What was the problem?
The problem was that I thought, you know, Bill Gates would obviously do an interview with me. I was very naive.
Why wouldn't
I thought,
he?
Yeah, I thought that would be the easy
part. But you're
part.
A young kid reaching out. You'd think he'd grant it.
That was
it.
My thinking.
Yes.
I thought Bill Gates was my generation Santa Claus.
Yep.
That, I assumed, would be the easy part. The hard part was getting money to fund the journey. I was buried in tuition payments. I was all out of bar mitzvah cash. So there had to be a way to make some money.
Mm-hmm.
So two nights before final exams, my freshman year of college, I find tickets to The Price is Right.
Where?
So I'm going to school at USC.
Yeah.
And The Price is Right is filming a few miles from campus.
Yeah.
And that's when my thinking kicked in of, what if I go on the show and win some money to fund this journey?
Personal question, but I need to ask it. Bob Barker, Price is Right, or later?
Very
Drew Carey, Price
Drew
is Right?
Carey's
Don't
Price
be, no, that's fine. That's all right. Still counts. Drew Carey still counts.
He's too young to have had Bob Barker, I
well,
think.
Well, I grew up watching clips of Bob Barker, but I never watched a full episode. It was the show I watched when I was homesick from school.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So I'd never seen a full episode, but I thought, how hard could it be? So that night, I decide to pull an all-nighter to study. But I don't study for finals. I study how to hack The Price is Right.
Oh, smart.
And I go on the show the next day and execute this ridiculous strategy. I end up winning the whole showcase showdown, winning a sailboat, selling the sailboat, and that's how I funded the book.
That's outstanding.
How old were you when you did this?
I was 18.
God.
Wow.
I was like 18 in a few months, and the cutoff age is 18.
Wow.
So I was probably the youngest you could be to get on the show.
And if I read The Third Door and I have a 19-year-old, if he reads this, are we going to figure out how to put our lives together?
I hope so. That's
What do you mean, I hope so? There has to be some guarantee.
But Alex, what you, the story you just told is proof positive that that third door exists. Mm. You figured out a way. You didn't have the money, and all of a sudden, through some strange means, you acquired the money. That's your third door right there, right?
Exactly. And the whole book is a collection of, it's written as a overarching narrative, but it's full of different stories from Steve Wozniak to Maya Angelou to Warren Buffett about how they launched their own careers using that third door too.
Yeah.
Business Insider just named this book one of the best business books of the summer. Congratulations on
that. That must have been upsetting to get that news, right? That's terrible. So did you have the names you just mentioned? That's quite an illustrious group of people, success from every direction. Do you think those people knew early on that they were headed toward that success, or did it just kind of happen?
There was an intention.
Yeah.
But it wasn't an accident.
No.
And what I believe is that every single one of these people, the thing that they had that made them so special is they had a belief that it was possible. And what I've learned is that when someone changes what they believe is possible, they change what becomes possible. And that's the most powerful thing.
What is that saying, you know, be the reality? I can't remember it. But, you know, and is it like putting it out there, like the secret? Like you have to think positive, or?
I don't think it's that, you know, fluffy. I think it's
you have
very,
to work for it.
I think it's very tangible. But I think the most important thing is that, you know, you can give someone all the best tools and knowledge in the world. They can be educated at the best universities. They can have access to all the best mentors. But sometimes their life can still be stuck.
Right.
But if you change what someone believes is possible, they'll never be the same.
Right.
And that's not only what I've learned about the people in the book, that's also what I've learned that the book gives readers. It changes what they believe is possible.
We'll continue talking to Alex Banayan. You need to get this book. It's called The Third Door. There's a website. You can get it at Amazon, everywhere.
Everywhere books are sold.
And your website?
Yep, thirddoorbook.com.
Quick break, and we'll be back and find out how to be successful. I have to change my reality to, I don't know, I don't get all this mumbo jumbo.
Yeah.
But I'm going to read the,
book. All right, more after this. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's Bill Leffin. It's Wendy Snyder. Our guest is Alex Banayan. He has written a book. It's his first book. It's called Third Door Book. Oh, I'm sorry, The Third Door. It's a book. Wow. All these words. All right, so here's a question. When you first started this and you decided you're going to talk to some of the most powerful, the most successful people out there, what did you do? You drew up a list, probably, and what was your criteria for who would be on the list?
So I had a problem when I was just starting out. How do you determine who the most successful people are?
Yeah.
So I did the only thing I could think of. I called my best friends, you know, we're freshmen in college. They all come over one night, and I said, guys, if we can create our dream university, mm-hmm. who would be our professors? Mm. And that made it very easy. Mm-hmm. Bill Gates would teach business. Lady Gaga could teach music. Maya Angelou would teach poetry. Jane Goodall, science. Mm-hmm. Steve Wozniak, computer science. Zuckerberg, tech. So that's how we created this list, which really became the treasure map for this journey.
Okay, so you meet these people. What do you talk to them about?
So for everyone, it was different. For Bill Gates, we dove into his sales and negotiation secrets.
So you're trying to learn something by interviewing him?
Yeah, from every single person. So with Steve Wozniak, we talked about his secrets to re-engineering success. For Jessica Alba, we talked about how she harnessed her biggest fears to launch her billion-dollar business. For Pitbull, we talked about the keys to continued success. So for everyone, it was just filled with surprising lessons at every turn.
Yeah.
And once you got to them, they were very willing to talk?
Once I was in the room, but before I got in the room, it was the exact opposite.
So,
were you nervous? You're a young guy at this point. You're still a young guy, but you were even younger then. Were you a little bit nervous talking to these giants?
It's so funny. If you listen to the audio recordings, especially the early ones with Maya Angelou, my voice is like, you know, a couple octaves higher.
And really?
I'm like, when you were first... And then you can hear the progression by...
The more you did it, the
easier by it Quincy
got.
Jones at the end. It's a 2.5 hour conversation in his living room, and we're just going back and forth. And it completely changed my life.
Forbes magazine, you were on 30 Under 30. Congratulations on that. Like I mentioned, Business Insider's Most Powerful People Under 30. And what advice do you have to people, have other than read The Third Door, what advice do you have for people out there that want to achieve success? Don't give up?
You know, one of the things that surprised me most about this journey, when I started, I had this belief that all these people who I looked up to were fearless. You know, Bill Gates starting Microsoft.
That.
Right.
Yeah.
What I learned is that every single one of these people was actually tremendously scared on their journeys. Now, there's a difference, though, because while they were tremendously scared, and their goal wasn't to be fearless, their goal was to be courageous.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a difference.
Mm-hmm.
Fearlessness is jumping off the cliff and not thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Courage is acknowledging your fear, analyzing the consequences, and still caring so much you're going to take one thoughtful step forward anyway.
Yeah.
All right. What are your thoughts on college? You bailed on college and went on The Price is Right, and now your life is completely different.
All kids
different.
Should do that, don't you think, Alex? All kids should
that
do that.
That is not the moral of the story.
No, but I will bring that up because, you know, it's so funny listening to my brother and sister-in-law talk. Their kids all graduated from college, and I kind of overheard them talking, saying, if I had to do it over again, I don't know if college is always the answer. I just want your thoughts on that.
You know, I think the way you just phrased it just now is great, which is not always the answer. I do think, for the most part, college is an incredible way for people not only to learn, but to really get that economic mobility, which is super important across the board. But there are instances where, you know, if you look at Bill Gates, it wasn't like he just dropped out of college and burned his textbooks and put his middle finger in the sky.
Mm-hmm. He had a mission.
He had a mission. And what people don't understand is that he was so thoughtful and cautious about leaving school that he said, all right, I'm going to take one semester off and see how it goes with Microsoft. And it didn't go as well as he had wanted. So he went back to college for another semester until things started to take off.
You're going to open so many doors for people who read The Third Door. I'm telling you that right now. It's just a different way of thinking. I can't wait to read it.
I appreciate that so much.
When you're in the room with these people, the super successful, do you get the feeling that they're different from most of us? Or do you get the feeling that they're just like us?
Funny enough, the answer is both.
Really?
In the sense that, you know, you're sitting with Bill Gates. He has a cerebral ability that is very hard to come across.
Yeah.
But also at the same time, you see his, like, socks bunched low and his, you know, sipping his Diet Coke and it dribbles a little down his cheek. And
right.
You say, you know, he's just like my uncle.
Well, there's always that. I'm sure you've heard it, that story about Albert Einstein, that he could come up with the theory of relativity, but look at his shoes. They're not tied.
Right.
You know?
Exactly. And he had a messy desk. He was a
horribly
clutterer.
Messy desk. Yeah.
So there's a humanity with all these people, and you learn there's this famous Maya Angelou quote of, we're more alike than we are unalike.
Yeah.
She was something else. Mm-hmm. Oprah. You met Oprah?
Oprah was one of the people that was incredibly hard to get to. But
that's Oprah.
But one of the most amazing things is this week during book launch, Oprah's Super Soul Sunday team has put out the Maya Angelou interview multiple times in the Jessica Alba interview. So they've been tremendously supportive during the book launch.
The problem when you get together an array of people like you did for the first book is if you say, now I got to do a sequel, a lot of the good people are taken, but not all of them. Do you have a dream list for a second book if you decide to do a second?
I don't have a dream list per se, but I do know one person who I'm incredibly passionate about is Barack Obama.
Oh, yeah. That'd be great.
Bill, you have connections, don't
you? Yeah,
Well, you can call him up right now.
Yeah. We're in the same fantasy baseball league. I'll throw you his number.
You know, what's funny is that I had always, of course, admired him during his political career as president, but it was really this past year when my dad passed away. And for some reason, I remember like 2 or 3 days after the funeral, I was in bed. I couldn't really get out of bed.
Yeah.
And I saw Dreams from My Father, Obama's first book, on my shelf. And I'd never read it before, but it had the word father in it. So I just pulled it off, and I took the day off, and I was reading that book. And it gave me a sense of solace that I couldn't have imagined.
Mm.
Which is why I'm so drawn to, if we do a second book.
He'd be number one on your list.
Absolutely.
I hope you get it. I hope that happens.
I can't see him turning you down, especially after saying that.
Mm.
Yeah.
I really can't. I mean, you might be able to get in the first door on this one.
I love it. And do you know what? I know even what I would want to ask him. It's
All there.
Yeah, it's all there.
Yeah.
I can't wait to read this.
Thank you so much.
I know that it took you 7 years and then it finally gets published. What does that feel like to work on something that hard, that long, and all of a sudden see it happen? What does that do for you?
On the one hand, it's incredibly fulfilling.
Yeah.
On the other hand, it's incredibly confusing because I've spent 7 years with this in my head, on my computer, on Microsoft Word. And to be holding it in my hand and see people on the streets and on Instagram taking pictures of it, I'm like, how did they get my book? Right. My brain hasn't caught up to the reality that it's finally out.
He's on Twitter. You can get him at Alex Banayan. It's B-A-N-A-Y-A-N, exactly. Correct? And you can also go to thirddoorbook.com. You can look on Amazon. You can go to your favorite bookstore. It's everywhere. Congratulations.
Thank you guys
Great
so
meeting
much.
You. Thanks for coming up, Alex. Likewise. We're proud of you. That's quite an accomplishment.
Thank you.
A quick break, some news, and then a lot more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Thank you, Eric. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And we have a return visitor in the studio with us. On the 30th anniversary, I believe, of the Lori Dan shooting, we had FBI veteran Phil Andrew, who was appointed by the Archdiocese of Chicago and Cardinal Blaise Subich of Director of Violence Prevention. And Phil brought up this young woman named Audrey Wright. She is going to be a senior at North Lawndale College Prep High School. Audrey, we are so happy to have you back. I just Thank have you. To tell you, I have told so many people about you. I'm like, there's this girl, and she's only a junior in high school, and she's formed this group called Peace Warriors, and she's trying to have like a peer-to-peer help session so people don't have problems, and I have been bragging about you nonstop.
Thank you.
You moved a lot of people last time. You came in and talked, and we were watching the texts come in, and people were just going, why isn't she running the government? Why isn't she in charge of something huge? So you have a bright future ahead of you. Let's talk about what's taking place tomorrow.
Okay, so tomorrow I will be participating in a TED Talk downtown in Chicago.
Congratulations.
Right. This is huge. Yeah. Have you watched a lot of TED Talks? Because I love these things.
Yeah, I love TED Talk. And when they asked me, I was like, are you serious? Like, you asking me? They was like, so serious. And I was like, yeah, I'll do it. You know?
So what's the focus? Because I hate to do this to you, but if I was doing a TED Talk, I would be really nervous.
Ooh.
Don't, you're not, are you? Are you nervous?
Just a tad
Don't
bit.
Be nervous.
I'm more excited. So excited. Yeah. So basically, I'm going to be talking about the Peace Warriors, what we do, how it had an impact on my life since I came to North Lawndale, and basically the work we do surrounding Peace Warriors, how it was started, and yeah. You know, stuff like that.
I hate to ask you to repeat yourself, but for those who didn't hear you the last time on, give us a little history of the Peace Warriors and what they do.
Okay, so basically, the Peace Warriors is a group organization organized by student leaders at North Lawndale College Prep. And what we do is we basically help keep peace in our school environment and our communities. We have to go through a training, and we based our work based off of Dr. King's 16 and nonviolence principles. And we use those to face violence, to, you know, help our peers in schools who has lost a loved one, who's going through, like, some personal challenges.
Right.
So we're kind of like the counselors, student counselors at school.
But young people, I feel like students are going to have a better shot talking with someone their age, rather than going, you know, counselors' doors are always open. Sometimes it's hard to walk in that door.
Yeah, and when you can have that, like, student-to-student, you know, connection, it kind of brings, like, a good vibe to the school, because, you know, everybody's in different grade levels, so everybody is basically on different pages. But as Peace Warriors, we like to bring the students together to, you know, help one another, be there for each other, because, you know, it's not a lot of hope in our community, and we bring that hope to our school environment and in our communities.
Audrey, people who study this sort of thing, conflict experts, always say that if you know your enemy, it's hard for them to be your enemy. The more you know somebody, it makes it hard to
that's how we
to
got like together.
Yeah, that's exactly the principle Wendy and I show our filter on. So you know what I mean by that, though, right?
Yeah.
If you get to know somebody, you go, wow, that person's not that different from me. Why are we fighting all the time?
Yeah, a lot of people. Yeah, and that's one thing that we focus on. Like, we use peace circles. You know, a lot of people have differences, which causes, like, a lot of altercations. But in peace circles, we listen to both sides, and basically we lay out the facts, and, you know, we basically have them look at the other side, look at it from this person's perspective, look at it from that person's perspective, and you'll see at the end of the day that both of y'all kind of have the same things in common,
sure.
Which, you know, then you'll notice, like, oh, this difference that we had really wasn't that big of a difference at the end of the day. So, like, a lot of peace circles will leave out, oh, yeah, we can move past this. Maybe we can become back friends, you know, stuff like that.
Will you be at the summit with Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un? Are you going to be sitting at the table?
She's the one who could make it happen.
We could definitely use your help in this.
I wasn't thinking about it.
No? All right.
You know, something you said last time you were on with us has stuck with me. You said, and this might have been right after Parkland, or there was some other school shooting at the time that you were on with us. Yes.
Yeah.
And you had said a shooter does not wake up that day and just decide, I'm going to shoot up the school. Mm-hmm. There's something going on with them, whether they have problems at home or they've been bullied at school. What are the things you look for in a student to approach them? Like maybe someone who's had some absences. What do you look for?
So we do keep track of like disciplinary logs, attendance, and you know basically how the person come in, because like peace warriors were like the greeters up in the morning, so we have music playing and everybody would come in and we'd be like good morning, so we see everybody that come through the doors in the morning. Mm-hmm. So if we see someone who's not like looking well or who doesn't feel good or just kind of look very like moody, we'll try to pull them to the side and like ask, oh, are you okay, or maybe check on them later on in the day to see how they're feeling.
How do they respond of that when that happens?
Most of the time they would like to talk because they you know
they need to talk.
Yeah, they know they need to talk. They know they wouldn't make their day without talking to someone first before the school day starts. A lot of them know that if they come to school in the morning with, you know, a moody type of mood, they know they're not gonna have a good day. So they come find one of the peace warriors and want to talk to them, or they go talk to Mr. Smith, or maybe they do go talk to their counselors. But a lot of people like talking to the peace warriors.
Do you find that it tends to be the same kids on a fairly regular basis, or is it always a different kid?
Every day it's a different day.
Yeah.
Basically, it depends. Like, we do have those same peace warriors who come in. Well, we have those same peers who come in and check with us every day, talk, ask us how we're doing, ask, we ask them, you know, just like a normal conversation, just to make sure that everyone is okay.
Yeah.
You know, something you learn probably later in life, I wish I would have known this when I was in high school, but sometimes the bullies are bullied, therefore they bully.
A lot of times,
right? Yeah, so we don't like to point fingers. Like, we know, like, you did this, you did that, but we don't more so like to put all of that weight on one person. Both of you guys were, you know, victims to it and you were suspects. So, you know, you played your role. What can you do to move on from it?
Right.
Instead of pushing it to a bigger altercation.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So.
Yeah. Who trained you to know all this? Somebody must have said that.
I know, she's so smart.
You can't just know all this instinctively, can you?
Why I can't know?
Can you?
Yeah. I mean, you know, like, a lot of it is common knowledge. If you, like, really sit down and, you know, you become aware of your surroundings, you will see that a lot of this stuff that goes on, you know, it's always a cause and an effect.
Right.
So if you train yourself and if you notice, like, oh, this person is having a bad day, don't mess with them. I'm not having a bad day. Let me remove myself. Then you know that, you know, you can be a part of a, you know, solution in a problem.
Mm-hmm. It takes a special person, though, to be aware of your surroundings and aware of other people's feelings, because a lot of people are just worried about themselves.
Yes, and that's, I don't like, it's okay to worry about yourself, but then again, don't become cocky, don't become self-centered, because, you know, if you're a leader, if you're looked at as a leader, you're supposed to be the forefront.
Right.
You're supposed to be the one that help others as well as helping yourself.
Do any of these kids, Audrey, ever go, well, what do you know? You're just a kid, too. You don't know all this. Does that ever happen?
I haven't heard.
No one's ever said that? Good.
No.
Good.
No.
She is the amazing Audrey Wright. She's going to be a senior this coming fall at North Lawndale College Prep High School. We're going to take a quick break and talk about her TED Talk tomorrow. Her name is Audrey Wright. She's going to be a senior at North Lawndale College Prep High School. Audrey, you are going to be talking about your upcoming TED Talk tomorrow. I'm so very excited for you. Now, did you form Peace Warriors yourself? Did you have a group? Did you not form it and you're just part of it?
Okay, so basically the Peace Warrior organization was created back in 2009. It was founded by Miss Tiffany Childress Price. She was my chemistry teacher at the time. And she basically went to Rhode Island, got this training in Keenan nonviolence, and brought it back to North Lawndale. And then she created the Peace Warrior organization. When it was created, it was with like 17 students.
Mm-hmm.
And then from then on, we continue to grow.
How many now, ballpark?
We have over 120 Peace Warriors.
That's
total.
Great. At the one school?
No. So we have two campuses. Yes. Okay. So we have two campuses. So total from both campuses.
So with the success that this has been, why wouldn't a school subscribe to this? What's in it for a school to not play by these rules?
That's up to the, that's
sense,
up to
right?
the, yeah, it just makes sense. Like, it's really up to the school, like, whether or not they want to include Peace Warriors or not. But I feel like all schools should have some type of student, you know,
system. Is there
system.
Any downside to it that you can think of?
No.
I can't either.
No.
Do you have a lot of success stories that you physically were excited about? Like, you saw a kid who was experiencing some issues and you spoke to him or her and then you've seen them turn it around?
So, I do have a lot of success stories. Basically
not success stories as well. I'm sure you keep trying though.
Oh yeah, I have those too. I kind of have both sides. So like one success story is a female in my grade. She had lost a loved one and she came to me. She cried on my shoulder and I basically took her in the room, calmed down, basically listened to her. That's the key thing, to listen to them. You gotta listen to them. Even if you don't understand that situation, just make sure you're there. Like, that's all that matters, that you're there for that person. And ever since that day, we keep in contact. I check in on her. She check in on me.
Yeah.
You know, so it's kind of good to know that you have those type of relationship with students who are non-peace warriors because they go through things as well.
Right.
What made you want to get involved in this? Did something happen in your family that made you want to help others?
Yes. So during my freshman year of high school, I lost my mom and my oldest brother within 3 days from each other.
Oh, my God.
So,
terrible.
Yeah, it was due to sickness. So I kind of, so that kind of,
Boy, that made you grow up.
Yeah, so it kind of like led me to do a 360 turn in like my attitude and behavior.
Yeah.
So I actually moved to Georgia to try to get a fresh start and whatever. And then that following year in March, I lost my father.
Oh my God.
So, yeah. So, you know, those events, you know, took a hard turn in my life, but when I came back home, I knew that, you know, time was running out. College. So I had to figure out a way to get back on my A game, get back on my square. And that's when I came to North Lawndale, I was introduced to the Peace Warriors. And since I joined the Peace Warriors, I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
I seen growth within my behavior, my attitude. Like, you don't have to be bad to be a Peace Warrior. You don't have to be good to be a Peace Warrior. A lot of the kids join because they want to work on self-discipline, but they know they want to help others as well.
Right.
And that's the reason why I'm doing it.
You know, a lot of people, when faced with the adversity you were faced with, you lost three people in a very short span of time.
Mm-hmm.
They would have crumbled under that. You did the exact opposite.
Yeah, a lot of people, I do get asked, like, how do you do it?
How do you have the strength? I mean, I would have just shut down.
I mean, my mom was, she was a strong queen. My mom was a strong queen. Due to her sickness, she kept going. She made sure I was good and then some. Like, she went beyond, you know, her limits, and that kind of instilled the same strength in me.
Yeah.
So I took on, you know, the strength that my mom had and, you know, instilled that in me and continued to do what I know she would want me to do.
Look what she taught you in her passing to be stronger.
Yeah.
Boy, that's the ultimate lesson from a mother.
I feel so bad that they didn't get to see how this paid off, that you've been so successful and continue to be so successful and change people's lives. I guess they do.
They're watching down.
They see it.
I just wish they were there for you to tell you in those words how proud they are of you, you know?
Yeah.
You're an amazing young woman, only 17 years old.
Yes.
You said you were thinking about college, and that's awesome. What do you want to be when you grow up?
So I actually want to double major in pre-law and business.
Mm-hmm.
I said business because I want to own my own dance studio.
Oh.
Because
the
dancing I'm a dancer.
Lawyer.
those two kind of don't, you know, go together. But
sure
I've always been passionate about music because that's what my parents instilled in me from a young age. So I've always had an old soul, old music, dancing and all of that. But then again, I'm very argumentative. So I would want to, you know, put that into something that would be, you know, good for my life.
So Audrey F. Lee Bailey, one of the finest lawyers ever, danced with the Bolshoi Ballet for years and years. I saw him several times. He was magnificent. So it's not unprecedented.
Yeah. You are so amazing. Now, this event tomorrow will be taped for a TED Talk, and you had to purchase tickets for it. And from our understanding, this is sold out.
Yeah.
So the only way you can see Audrey Wright in her TED Talk is look for that. When is that going to be available? Do you have any idea?
No.
I think they run them live? I think they do, don't they? You can stream them?
I don't know. You're not sure?
I'm not sure. I don't know.
She would probably let me know tomorrow or something.
All right.
Well, people, Google her. Her name is Audrey Wright, W-R-I-G-H-T. She's going to be doing a TED Talk tomorrow. Google Audrey Wright and Peace Warriors. And if there's somebody listening, I know school's out for summer. Is Chicago Public School out for summer already?
Yeah, we're out.
Yeah.
We're out.
Thank God. If there's someone listening, we don't have a lot of kids listening to us, but if someone's listening that is experiencing some problems, whether it be at home or at school, what's some advice for them?
Talk it out. Basically, find you someone who you know is going to be there through it all. You know, everybody have their downfalls, everybody have their upbringings, but if you don't have support, then you will find yourself breaking yourself, beating yourself down, and that's something you don't want. So find you somebody who you can trust and that you know you can always go to talk to somebody, because talking can go a long way, you know, and having support, even if it's one person, that one person can change, can make a big difference.
Do you have someone to talk to?
I have a lot of people to talk to. I talk to my peace warriors.
Good.
I talk to my peace warriors. I talk to my counselors, my teachers. I talk to my family members. So I have a big support system.
You are amazing. You really are.
You know, Wendy started a restaurant called Pizza Warriors. If you want to sue her, you can. I'll get in on that.
Pizza Warriors.
Yeah. I told her not to do it, but she went and did it.
Do you have more for you?
No.
No, don't believe a word out of his mouth. You can't trust him. You can trust me. And seriously, I'm glad you have support, because really, you are just an amazing person. You're 17 years old. You have to be how old to be president?
35. You're halfway there.
All right, Audrey. I hope we have a woman president before that, before you turn 35, but I want you to be president someday. Any thoughts of running? I know you want to be a dancing attorney, but maybe politics too?
I haven't thought about politics.
Never say never? You haven't thought about it?
Yeah, never say never. I haven't thought about it, but...
The changes she's making in people's lives at 17, you could really do some good when you're 35.
Yep. Yeah. It's so inspiring. Audrey, great to see you again. Good luck tomorrow.
Thank you. We're all pulling for you. Rock it, girl.
Thank you. You can do it. All right. That's Audrey Wright. We'll take a quick break and then some news. And then Eric Zorn. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Zorn, Zorn, Zorn. The greatest father in all the land. Zorn, Zorn, Zorn. We sing the praises of Zorn.
That's a cover. Rare. He's got a cover version now. Yeah. Wendy's got a cover version.
You didn't know I could sing so low, did you?
No, that was fantastic.
That's wonderful.
I'll be playing Caiaphas in Jesus Christ. Wow.
I just bought two tickets.
I'm exhausted. I had to walk over here. I used to come down the stairs, like three flights of stairs. Now I got to walk over here.
For people who don't understand, the reason of that is that forever we've been based here, both the newspaper and our radio station and the Tribune Tower. You guys have already made the move over to our new building.
Right. My office is exactly three floors. I'm on the fourth floor here. You guys on the first floor. Just like get in the stairs and go right down. I could have had a pole. I mean,
yeah, that would have been nice.
But we're going to be in different buildings now.
Right, but you'll be closer, actually. We moved down to Prudential, one of the Prudential buildings down there. And this morning, it was just crazy. It was like, everyone felt like at the first day of school, you know, when you go and you don't know where your locker is.
Right, you don't know, like
the first day of junior high, you don't know where the locker is, you don't know where the bathrooms are, you don't know where anything is, and you wonder if the kids are going to like you, and you kind of gravitate toward familiar faces. That was exactly what it was like. Place looks like a sports bar. We've got TVs everywhere.
Really?
Yeah. I'm not quite sure I understand. I mean, like, the Price is Right is on.
Oh.
And let's make a deal. I'm not sure. I get having CNN and MSNBC and Fox News running in the background. But we got all these shows.
But if Wayne Brady says or does something outrageous during Let's Make a Deal, you guys will be
You would want to know. You'd want to jump on that.
Now, wait a minute. After the morning news shows, that's what kicks in. So they had the morning news shows
on. I guess
on.
So. But someone has to be in charge. It's a very funny look. And they're huge TVs. Wonder if much better than I have at home. They're hanging everywhere.
That's not right.
And we're really sitting close to each other. It's very, very different. feel over there. So
the seating arrangement at our new place is very different too. Everybody is a little more closer together. I think that was intentional, don't you?
I think it's basically an economy move.
Is that what it is?
I think so. Although we have all these little rooms, they're called huddle rooms, where you're allowed to go and meet with people like one-on-one, and you can get some peace and quiet. There are health rooms, which I think is another name for a lactation room.
Oh.
It's like gender.
That might not be for you.
Well, if I'm feeling peaked, you know, right. I could go and sit in there.
God, I haven't thought of that word peaked since I was a little girl. You look peaked, said the school nurse to me.
That's the first word they teach school nurses. Say this with me, peaked. All right, you can be a school nurse.
You look peaked. So it's going to be a whole new experience. But we do have these really cool desks that you press one button and it goes all the way up. And then
Press
the button and goes down. Standing desks, which I've never used.
It's like a carnival ride.
Have you ever used one?
No.
Desk? No.
We're going to have in the new studio, the counter is up higher. So if you want to stand, which I always like to stand, we used to stand a lot doing radio before, but this, it's like you have to sit down. You can sit or stand at the new place, but it doesn't move.
When Jonathan Brandmeier was here briefly, didn't he stand up? I seem to remember photos of him standing up where you are, Wendy, but standing up and bending down.
It would be hard to do.
I've never seen him sit down, and I've known him a long time.
Right.
Rooster.
But, you know, noted pet expert Steve Dale stands while he does his show. Not when he's a guest on ours, but when he does his own, he stands.
You get more oxygen to your brain, and then you say better things.
They say, like, sitting...
That's my excuse, by the way.
Yeah, I believe you. I do believe you.
So every time something goes, you say something dumb, you say, oh, God, if only I were standing up.
Right. I'm sitting on my brains.
they say that sitting is like the new smoking. It's like it's a bad thing to sit a lot.
It is bad for you.
And so people sit on little exercise balls, and then they have these standing desks. And I was using it for the first time this morning. I was just answering email. I kind of liked it, you know, for a short time.
Feel more productive.
I guess.
Somebody put out a work desk where you can – it's a desk where you sit, but it also has a bicycle feature, so you can pedal while you're doing your work.
I've seen those. I've seen treadmill desks,
too. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That seems
– All right, that's a little too much.
You're doing a lot at one time.
You could maybe do your show on the air like that. Just you would do
– Yes. We'll be out of breath around 10:08.
Fit you would be. It'd be so wonderful.
That's true. What about the nostalgia factor? There's got to be an element to that for you. How many years have you been in this building?
Well, I was first interviewed here in 1980, in January of 1980. So that's, 38 years ago when I first came here. And the room I was interviewed in was, again, right upstairs. And the room is right next to the room that I ended up having an office
in. Oh, wow.
All these years later, and because the woman who interviewed me was a city editor, and some story was breaking. I don't know what. So she would ask me a couple questions, and then she'd go, "Just a minute, hang on," and she'd run out. It was very dramatic. I felt like I was on the front page or something like that. She'd go back, and then like 20 minutes later, she'd come back and go, "I think things are under control." And then she'd say, "So, you know, where do you see yourself in 5 years?" Wait a minute, hold that thought, and run out. So I was there for like 2 hours, looking out at the building right across the street, thinking, "Boy, it would sure be cool to work here," and it was.
Your story. There's something I've always wondered, and I don't know if this only happens in movies or TV shows about newspapers, but does anyone ever say stop the presses, or is that just a staple that you see in movies about newspapers?
I would think that, yeah, it would happen. I can't think of a time that it did.
Yeah.
But that, you know, news would, first of all, we used to print all these. Remember the Green Streak edition?
Sure.
We would print like throughout the day various editions.
Because there were updates always.
So if you could have something like a Green Streak being printed, and then suddenly something happened, you know, where President Reagan was shot or something like that.
Yeah.
I'm sure that they literally did stop the presses. I don't know that they shout stop the presses, but they may say, you know, hang on, we need to, you know, replate this.
Yeah.
So yeah, that does happen. It's this old technology that we have where we're trying to figure out eight hours in advance what you're going to want to see on your doorstep the next morning.
The famous Tribune headline of Harry Truman holding up a newspaper, Chicago Tribune, that says Dewey defeats Truman with a look on his face of, this didn't happen. Does that paper physically exist somewhere on the premises here?
I don't know if the paper does. We certainly have the plate for it, and it's a display that we have, and it's something that we used to kind of embrace. It was our logo. When we first went on to AOL, that was our logo, was Truman holding that paper. And it's something that actually really haunted the paper, still does in some ways, where we don't ever want to do that again. Obviously, no paper does, but that was really embarrassing.
So that paper went out to all the subscribers in the morning because it so looked like Dewey had defeated Truman. That was physically delivered,
right? It's one of those things, I think it was. I don't think all the papers were. I think it was just some edition of the paper.
Yeah.
But what happened was that, you know, every election night, we're up against the clock because the polls close at 7, and the counting is always slow and the reports are slow. So you look at all these key precincts. And you often, like on TV, remember when they made a call, Florida was for Gore, and they pulled it back and so on. I mean, that happens in our newsroom too, but we can't just say, oh, well, you know, we said a few minutes ago it was Gore, now it's Bush. We have to make a call, and so I think we were much more casual back in, what was it, 1948, I think it was, right? Much more casual about that, thinking, well, you know, these precincts look like they've gone, it looks like the Electoral College is going to go this way, let's, you know, print it, let's go with it,
right.
We'll take a chance. We will do that now, you know, our threshold for that is much, much higher now, so that we really have to be sure.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we'll say, you know, it's a squeaker or something.
Right.
Even when we think we know who won.
Just to be noncommittal.
We got to be sure. And the Dewey Defeats Truman headline comes up. It comes up on every election night. People say, we don't want another Dewey Defeats Truman thing. So it was in some ways a good thing that happened to us. It made us not make that mistake again.
All right, a quick break and then more with Eric Zorn. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy. But first, before anything else, this needs to be said. It's Bing Crosby time, Wendy. You know, you spend about...
I'd like to sleep with Bing Crosby and those nice Brooklyn and sheets.
You've said that in the past, and we've gotten angry letters from the Crosby family.
Eric Zorn is here for the last time probably in this studio.
I love this studio. This is such a nice thing. I like looking at the people and waving to them.
Yep.
And they give me the finger. And yep. Everything. It's just like...
It shows that they care.
It does.
That's what
they're,
it means.
They're engaged listeners.
Can we talk about what you wrote yesterday in the Tribune?
Single. Yeah. You know, I came back to this issue of Rod Blagojevich and whether he should still be in prison.
Yeah.
At last Tuesday, his lawyers filed the paperwork for executive clemency, which is the formal process that you go through if you want, in this case, the president to give you a break. And there are good arguments on both sides. We've hashed them out here before, but it was 14 years too long. How bad a crime was it that he committed? Other corrupt politicians have done much less time and so on. I can go either way on that. But one of the things that really strikes me, and it struck me while he was in office, was that when you're governor of Illinois, you also have commutation pardon powers. It's executive clemency. It's this power that traces back to the divine right of kings in terms of our in common law. And the governor
has to be a crime that is committed within the boundaries of Illinois for a governor.
Well, it's a state crime, not the boundaries of Illinois, but a state crime. State crimes and federal crimes. The president has jurisdiction over federal crimes. And the governor has jurisdiction for state crimes, which would be murder, shoplifting, you know, all kinds of misdemeanors. Most crimes are. Every crime that's down at the Layton Courthouse, all those things, they're all state crimes. So he has this power. Governors have this power. And he relentlessly refused to exercise it. By the time he left office, there were more than 3,000 petitions from people who wanted pardons or commutations from him and that he was not acting on. And the obvious reason was that it's controversial. When you deny somebody, it can be controversial. And when you let somebody go, or you release someone from their obligation, it can be controversial. A lot of these people were not in prison at the time. They were people who had felony convictions. You know, something like, you know, some woman had been convicted of a felony for shooting at her abusive husband, things like that, 20 years ago. And they think, well, I'm having trouble getting a job.
Right.
You know, felony convictions are a very difficult thing to overcome when you're looking for, when you're looking to move on with your life.
Sure.
So 3,000 people had been asking him for relief, and he was ignoring them. He wasn't acting on these. He acted on only some real easy ones, and of 93% of those, he denied. So...
Has anyone brought that up to him?
To him, I don't know. He hasn't talked to me, but I tried to bring it up to him because before he'd gone into prison, he was on the radio on WLS. They gave him a show.
Mm-hmm. I worked with him one day.
Did you?
I did traffic. He sat in for Don and Roma, and he was super nice.
Yeah. He's a friendly guy.
He really is.
He truly is. He's charming. That's how he got elected. And I offered at that point to debate him on this because he was accusing Pat Quinn of being slow on pardons, which was absurd. But the question is, these are people who, you know, they've got families, like he's got a family. They've got, in some cases, plausible claims of innocence or that their crimes weren't as serious as the punishment they're having to endure. And rather than giving them an answer, yes or no, he just sat on it. And like I said, Cabrini-Green Legal Aid had to sue him. They lost that suit, but the state lawmakers passed a law that allowed people who were waiting like this on Bogolevich to go around him to the courts. He tried to veto that bill, but they overrode his veto. So he was really... And then this stack of 3,000 was the biggest by far in the country.
Oh, really?
National election. Yeah. This is not
That's
normal
a huge
behavior.
Amount.
So karma here kind of demands that he at least be made to wait. Now, he's put in the paperwork. Let's let him wait the way he made so many other people wait for an answer.
But now Donald Trump, it seems to me that he's going to commute the sentence.
Oh, yeah,
because why would
he
you
will.
Even bring it up?
He if, will.
That
no,
would be the biggest, meanest psych ever.
No, he will. This is a columnist filling a column on Sunday with something to get people to think. It's not going to – Donald Trump's not going to read it and go, you know he's right.
But stem of this right. is from The Apprentice, right? If Blagojevich doesn't show up on Trump's show, on his TV show – then Donald Trump doesn't have any vested interest in Rod Blagojevich other than the fact that they knew each other for a little while. And
right, and I think he's pretty clearly using this, exercising his pardon power. He's talking about pardoning Muhammad Ali.
Right, who doesn't need to be
who
pardoned.
Who doesn't even...
doesn't need to be pardoned. He's already, his right. conviction's already been overturned. But this is Trump using, I think, his pardon theater. And I think what he's doing is he's sending a message to Paul Manafort, to Mike Flynn, all these other people who are under indictment or pleaded guilty, that they should not turn on him. They should not break bad on him because
he's
going to protect them. He's going to pardon them. In the end, he's going to say, this whole thing is a witch hunt. I'm going to pardon everybody. I'm going to end
including
this.
Himself, he said, if he had done something wrong, which he didn't.
But he said
he would have the power to pardon himself.
But people wouldn't stand for that. I'm sorry.
How would that play amongst most of America if he did have to pardon himself?
Well, if you'd asked me this 2 years ago, if a president under investigation would pardon himself, would the public stand for it, the answer would clearly be no.
Right.
There would be riots in the streets. But now it just seems like we have defined normal down to the crazy things that happen. He's going to fight with Canada now. You know?
Right.
It's like, how does this happen? How are people not completely outraged all the time by what's going on? But so I can see him just saying, I mean, this is just a witch hunt, that there's nothing to this. This is all politically motivated. He says that he's trying to imply that Mueller is a Democrat, which is absurd.
Yeah.
And also Rosenstein, the deputy attorney general, that he's a Democrat. These guys are all Republicans.
Yeah.
And he's trying to make it look like this is the Democrats out to get him. But the astounding thing is when you look at polls, his base voters believe him and support him. I think this is a witch hunt. So you're going to have a country, 40% of people still really support him, and they would support him if he did this. And it would be a rollicking issue. But I don't think, given the way that people in Congress, senators and congressmen, are not standing up to him in his own party. You see Jeff Flake and a few of the Republicans, John McCain, but those people are not going to run for re-election. Flake is not running. John McCain is probably going
to
die.
So they have nothing to lose, essentially.
So they've got nothing to lose, but those with something to lose, those who are running for re-election, are not standing up to him. So there seems to me like almost no chance that Trump would be removed from office. He might be impeached by a Democratic House, but the vote in the Senate would have to be 2/3, and I just don't see that happening at all. I think that we're all in our corners, we're all in our silos, so that's not going to happen. So he could, I think, that if he decides that this is just too much of a problem for him, he could pardon everybody. He could probably pardon Jared and Ivanka all of his staff, anyone who might be implicated in this, his attorney, all those people. He could just say, well, blanket pardons for everyone. And you can pardon people in advance.
Can you?
Yes, you can. Well, look what Ford did for Nixon, right? I mean, Ford just pardoned Nixon before Nixon was even charged with anything.
Are we being filmed? Is this a reality show that's going to come out, four, 3 years from now?
Yeah. I'm too young to remember the reaction to Gerald Ford pardoning Richard Nixon, but how did that play out?
I think people were angry about it. I'm not too young to remember it, but you were like me. I mean, we were sentient, but we weren't. This wasn't part. We were thinking about sports and girls.
Yeah,
and not
you were what?
Sentient.
Sentient. We were like thinking people, but
we were thinking about sports and girls.
We were thinking about sports and girls as opposed to Richard Nixon, which we're now thinking about.
Bill remembers his days back in the crib, though, so I'm surprised you don't remember this.
Bill's a trivia expert, so he would remember. He probably remembers the colors tie that Nixon was wearing when he resigned. But it was it's. it was, I think, a factor in Ford not winning re-election.
Yeah.
I don't know how big a factor, but people were angry about that. They wanted Nixon to pay a price. The alternative argument was, and that he made, which was that the country needed to move on beyond this scandal, beyond right. Watergate, and that putting the president on trial would be very disruptive to the country and serve no purpose because Nixon had lost his good name.
Doesn't Watergate seem small in comparison to what's going on lately?
Compared to the allegations, yes, it really doesn't does. It? It really does. And what's going on right now with Trump at the G7 alienating just about all of our allies
yeah.
while he's saying all these nice things about Kim Jong-un and clearly and he wants Russia to and be Putin. Back in this alliance. Yeah. And you're sort of wondering, if Bill Clinton had done this or Barack Obama had done this, you know, Republicans would be burning Washington down.
Yeah.
They really would be. I mean, they were criticized. When Obama even mentioned that he would think about talking to Kim Jong-un, they were like, you're naive, you're a simpleton, you're a fool, this yeah. would never happen. And now Trump's going over there with just saying that his personality alone
right.
is going to
and he'll know in the first minute whether or not it's working.
Because he does deals, that's what he does, is yep. what he says. Like
1 minute.
Trump Airlines and Trump University yeah. and all those
yep.
things.
Yep.
Sentient.
That's why I didn't know what it was. It's sentient. I felt really stupid. Sentient. I didn't know what that meant.
Is that not
sentient?
Sentient. Sentient.
I just felt stupid. So
oh, well, now I feel stupid. Great.
That's how you do things.
You're not supposed to do this to your guest.
A fine way to say goodbye to you in our last show in the Tribune Tower.
That's the Teutonic pronunciation.
Yeah.
Clearly.
That's the British way.
That's Eric Zorn, everybody. British. He's in the Tribune, and that's where you should read him.
Yes, and thanks, Eric. Where you can read it, I don't have to pronounce the words.
Right. So true. Thanks, Eric. We'll find out what's coming up next on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.